From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The devastation wrought by Hurricane Dorian has offered yet more dire evidence of the critical choice humanity faces to continue burning fossil fuels and heating up our atmosphere, or to choose a path away from climate destruction. On September 20th, a global climate strike of the likes we may have never before seen will mobilize people around the world to demand action on climate change. A week-long series of actions, events, marches, rallies, strikes, and more are intended to send a powerful message to decision makers that we can no longer continue with the status quo. One of those spearheading the global effort is my guest, Bill McKibben, internationally renowned climate activist, published author, founder of 350.org, winner of the Right Livelihood Award and other multiple awards. His latest book, published earlier this year, is called Falter: Has a Human Game Begun to Play Itself Out? Welcome to the program, Bill.
It's good to be with you, Sonali.
So when we look at the destruction of Hurricane Dorian, it's very easy to feel despair. It's hard to see the aerial images of everything that has been destroyed. Do you feel that enough people are even linking this unprecedented level of destruction, these strong hurricanes, to climate change? I mean, we should be able to assume that they are, but are they?
We should be feeling despair for people in the Bahamas who've literally seen their world turned upside down, but we also should be feeling anger. I mean, you know, it would make sense to name these hurricanes, you know, not things like Dorian, but things like Exxon and Chevron and BP, because that's where the damage is coming from now. Those are the people who've kept us for 30 years from dealing with the greatest crisis humans have ever faced. And it's them that I think a lot of us will have in mind when we're out on strike on September 20th in this biggest day of global action against this biggest of all crises.
Let's talk about what is set to happen. And this is months in the making. We have had a visit from Greta Thunberg, the 16-year-old climate activist from Sweden. She has taken a boat to the United States, and she has spearheaded the Fridays for Future climate strikes by school-aged children around the world. This has all sort of been leading up and building up to the September 20th set of events?
A year ago, Greta started striking in Sweden, but she's not alone. There are Gretas in every country, every city, every continent. There are young people around the world who are leading this fight, and often in the most vulnerable communities and the people who are feeling the effects first of climate crisis. And they've organized remarkably in schools over the last year. In the spring, there was one day when 1.4 million young people were out of their classes and in the streets, probably the biggest day of climate action we've yet had on the planet. But September 20th is going to be bigger by an order of magnitude, and that's because young people, after that last strike in the spring, said, when this starts up again in the fall, we need adults in there too. Not leading, but helping, following, giving it as much weight as it's possible to get. And so that's what we'll be doing. People will be coming out of their offices and factories, the biggest trade union in South Africa, a big trade union in Germany, right down to the, you know, headquarters of Ben and Jerry's ice cream. People are joining in from all over the place. And on September 20th, they'll be striking and they'll be protesting. They'll be demanding that our leaders take climate change with the seriousness that it deserves.
Bill, the last time I saw you in person was on the streets of Paris at the marches ahead of the UN climate conference, where the historic Paris Accord was signed, a flawed, a modest treaty, but nonetheless an agreement by almost every single country in the world. And since then, of course, we've had the Trump presidency that has just devastated even that, you know, modest measure. And it seems as though we have gone backwards since 2016, have we?
I think in some ways we really have. And it's not just Trump. It's others around the world, the sort of collection of, oligarchs across the planet. Bolsonaro in Brazil, Putin in Russia, the murderer, whatever his name is, in Saudi Arabia, on and on and on. These people are doing everything they can to keep the status quo from changing. On the other hand, the engineers have done their job pretty well, and the price of a solar panel and a wind turbine has come down even faster than we thought they would at Paris. And this movement has arisen. It's not just the young people at Fridays for the Future. It's also Extinction Rebellion. It's also the Sunrise Movement that's brought us the Green New Deal with Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. It's 350.org. It's everybody who's been working, I think, at a new level over this last year or two, aware that the scientists have given us a deadline. They're saying that if we haven't made real progress by 2030, then we have no chance of meeting those targets we set in Paris. With that deadline has come an even greater commitment to making the kind of change that we desperately need.
And at precisely the time when we need to be pulling back on the burning of fossil fuels, we're actually ratcheting it up in some parts of the world, including here in the United States. We know globally there have been studies showing that we actually put more carbon in the air last year than the year before, instead of less. That trend, which needs to start flattening and then going down, actually accelerated. And that is terrifying. We're seeing, the Alaska ice melt this summer. So the all around us, there's evidence. And yet, on Wednesday of this week, we had Donald Trump decide that his government wants to roll back regulations for incandescent bulbs to stop the transition to high energy, or energy efficient rather, lighting. I mean, even energy efficient lighting, which there isn't an argument against from the right, is now, in play. I mean, I can't even fathom the logic of that. Can you?
There's a nihilist quality to what Trump and people are doing. I think the right literary reference is probably to Voldemort and his crew of dementors. It is truly crazy. The good news, if you want some, is that on that same Wednesday, the Democratic candidates for president were all in a climate town hall, and one after another enunciating really remarkable plans for dealing with climate change. You've seen Bernie's plan. We saw it within the last 48 hours or so, Elizabeth Warren saying, you know what, Governor Inslee of Washington's plan was really good, which it was. I'm going to take that up as my way forward. I think that this election is crucial. Because finally, the Democrats seem to be taking seriously what we need to do. We're no longer sort of sitting around hoping that someone will ask a question about climate. Now the question is, will we have a full-fledged climate debate? The DNC doesn't want it, but the candidates seem to, so we may. And also, we're seeing people understanding that it's not just electoral politics that's the problem here, because it's not just governments that are the problem here. It's also the unelected governments of capital and finance, the giant banks and asset managers that are still allowing the fossil fuel industry to do its thing. Banks like Chase are lending more money than they did before Paris to the fossil fuel industry. So the fight is on. It's on in a serious way, and we don't know how it's going to come out. We don't know how it's going to come out politically, and that means we don't know what's going to happen to the planet. It is scary. We're seeing things we've never seen before, that humans have never seen before. When the hurricane came over Bahamas, the Washington Post said it did more, it was the most destructive siege of weather ever observed on planet Earth. And I mean, you probably have to go back to Noah to beat it, this is it is wild what's going on, and that's why it is so important that we see this movement rising up, and it's why September 20th becomes such a crucial date. Globalclimatestrike.net is the place to go to find out what's happening near you.
globalclimatestrike.net. We'll give that website out a couple more times before we end the conversation. I'm wondering if any Republicans, and I don't mean lawmakers, I mean rank and file, will show up to these marches, because we're seeing actually more and more awareness among conservatives and Republicans in the United States that climate change is real. There have been studies showing that there was actually a big jump in the, you know, skeptics coming to see the light among conservatives and Republicans in the United States, because they see around them all the evidence. It's sort of hard to refute it. And as you said, this has to become an important presidential election issue. But I'm wondering how, because it's easy to sort of say, well, this is a left-wing issue, let's dismiss it. But really, climate change is an existential issue, not a left-wing or right-wing issue, is it?
Well, that's very true. But I would not, I'm afraid, Sonali, hold my breath for the Republicans to play a major role here. There are signs that young Republicans are concerned about climate change. Right. If the Republican Party was smart, they would take it as an issue. But they've become, over the last 20 years, pretty much a wholly owned subsidiary of the fossil fuel industry. Their biggest funder by far are the Koch brothers, now Koch brother, Charles. And so he's our biggest oil and gas baron. We really don't have, I'm afraid, much chance that the Republican Party is going to play a constructive role in this going forward. Although, once Trump is decisively beaten, if he is, I think that the kind of worst forms of climate denial will probably go with him.
Well, we can only hope. In terms of the presidential candidates and the election that's coming up, Bernie Sanders has been talking about climate change for decades. There's video that's emerged of him speaking to children about climate change in 1987. So when we see some of the candidates who are sort of new to the conversation around climate change bring up an issue because they know that Americans care about it, I feel like at least one candidate stands out in how long he's been speaking about this issue. And, you know, if you are talking about sincerity, there's some sincerity right there, 1987.
Well, as you can tell, I'm a, balding, aging Vermonter, so I have no quarrel with what you're saying. But I will say that I think it's really good and important to see everybody on board here. The reason that we organize is precisely so that we can get people to become concerned, to work hard on issues, to make them priorities. And so I don't see any reason when people do that to then sneer at it either.
So you mentioned Extinction Rebellion is one of the movements, one of the organizations that are going to be participating September 20th through the 27th for the Global Climate Strike. Now, this was a movement that had its origins in the UK and was a movement that proved that it knows how to shut down a major center, major city, London, one of the most important, one of the busiest cities in the world in terms of financial activity, financial center. And Extinction Rebellion, even if it didn't get much media coverage here in the United States, consumed everybody in Britain with what that movement managed to do. Is that the kind of thing that that particular movement can, you hope, teach everybody in the global climate strike that's coming up?
Well, I think that Extinction Rebellion has done great work. I've had the great pleasure of working with them a little bit from the start, and it's wonderful to watch. You know, it's wonderful to watch nonviolence at work almost everywhere. So you draw inspiration from them. You draw inspiration from the very brave people in Hong Kong standing up to Beijing. You draw inspiration from the young student climate strikers. You draw inspiration probably most of all from frontline communities all over the world. I think of our colleagues in the South Pacific at 350 South Pacific, the Pacific Climate Warriors, whose slogan is, "We're not drowning, we're fighting." Even as their islands start to disappear, they're keeping up this battle and joining in with the rest of us. So really, I can't think of a good excuse for people in who don't need every single hour's pay and who don't have a boss who would fire them if they took part in a strike. if there's people who in those situations, and there are, then there's no reason for them to be striking. But for everybody else, then this is the, if you've been keeping your powder dry for the right moment has now arrived.
Do you hope that kids in particular who have not been involved in the Fridays for Future strikes the world over will show up without being penalized for a climate strike? I mean, it really makes sense for whole classrooms and schools to take that day to show up, you know, en masse to a major climate strike event near them. There's nothing I can imagine that would be of more importance educationally than taking Friday, the September 20th off and showing up to a climate rally.
It sort of defines teachable moment, doesn't it?
Exactly.
There have been big groups of teachers who have come together to say they're supporting their students, high school teachers, college teachers. I think you'll see an awful lot of kids out leading this fight on September 20th. And I imagine that there'll be some of them who will face penalties at school and who will do it anyway. And kudos to them. They take it very seriously because, of course, they're going to be living with it their whole lives. I'm going to be dead before the absolute worst peak of climate crisis hits. But people who are in high school or college now are going to be in the absolute prime of their careers. And it is makes sense that they lead, but it also makes sense that the rest of us follow. Those of us in older generations are at great risk of being the first generations that leave this world a much worse place than we found it. That's a pretty heavy indictment. So September 20th is a good time to start trying to right the balance a little bit.
Are there centers of gatherings that people might want to go to in Washington, D.C. or New York, or is it pretty decentralized?
It's pretty decentralized. There'll be stuff going on all over the place. There are rallies in all 50 states, hundreds and hundreds of them, and in thousands and thousands around the world. GlobalClimateStrike.net is your resource here. But I think there'll be a lot of eyes on New York because Greta Thunberg and other students will be there, and it'll be, you know, 2 days before her speech to the General Assembly of the United Nations, which should also be a really historic moment.
How important is it symbolically that a 16-year-old girl has become the face of the movement against climate change?
Well, I think that Greta would be the first to say that it's important that she not be the only face of it. You know, there are young people who've been doing this for a long time, and many of them are young people of color, people from poor communities and vulnerable communities. Who have even more practically at stake than people in Sweden at the moment. And she's done a very good job of making sure that their faces are represented too. And I think that that's really, really important.
A lot of times the right in their opposition to climate activism say that they are interested in not impacting the economies of the country. That's a standard argument, right? You might hear people who say, okay, we agree that the climate change is real. We understand this is real, but we can't afford to take the kind of action that you're recommending now because it would damage people even more. Working people would suffer, and we're supposed to believe that they care about working people, but that's a standard argument, and I'm sure it's going to be heard over and over again. I mean, when you hear some of these climate plans by some presidential candidates that run into the trillions of dollars, you have naysayers even in the sort of centrist so-called liberal media.
Well, I think that what people need to do is the full calculation.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, you add up what it's going to cost to get us to sun and wind, to energy efficiency in our houses and things like that, and it takes some money. On the other side, you add up first the amount of money that you save once you've got the solar panel on the roof and the insulation in the walls, then your energy bill goes down, 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 and your cash to spend on other things like healthcare, education goes up, up, up. More to the point, you have to start calculating how much we're going to spend if we don't do this. And every time any economist has run those numbers, the numbers that they come up with for what the price of unabated global warming are so enormous that they dwarf, and I mean dwarf, anything that we're going to be spending in this transition. The real economic hit here is not to economies. If we were doing that, as I say, we'd be obviously taking every precaution we could. The real hit is to the profits of oil companies. And that's what they're spending money to defend. That's what the Republicans are standing up for.
Of course, if you listen to Trump, and unfortunately there are too many Americans, even if they're in the minority, that listen to Trump, when the wind dies down, your television will turn off. I mean, it's just stunning the kind of misinformation that Trump has put out about wind energy in particular. He seems to hate it.
Yeah, I don't think anyone takes it very seriously, to tell you the truth. I think it's starting to be a joke, the idea that wind turbines cause cancer, that, you know, on and on, just silliness. Of course, everyone knows that you promote optimal energy storage in order to have the energy.
And unfortunately, we had to leave it there with Bill McKibben as his internet connection dropped out. He's a busy man traveling all over the country. My guest has been Bill McKibben, internationally renowned climate activist, published author and founder of 350.org, winner of the Right Livelihood Award and other multiple awards. His latest book is called Falter: Has the Human Game Begun to Play Itself Out? We've been discussing the upcoming global climate strike taking place September 20th through 27th. And more information can be found at globalclimatestrike.net. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.